Many different aspects of life in these disunited states are in turmoil. There are questions about social issues, economic issues, the future is uncertain. And amidst it all, local news outlets in the United States of America continue to decline. We've spoken in the past about the State of Local News Project out of Northwestern's Medill School. They've got an updated report. It's the 10th year that they've published this. Abby, what's on your mind?
So your opening statement there about all the things that are happening in the world, and we know that these things are happening in the world because we have access to a daily newspaper. We have access to national news outlets. We have access to the internet that allows us to see newspapers and broadcast outlets from around the world. But imagine if you live in a small rural community where the one and only newspaper is no longer, or that broadband internet is not readily accessible to everyone in your community. What do you do then to find out what's happening in the world? And at a time where knowing what's happening is so critically important, it is disturbing and troubling that this study, which is, as you said, in its 10th year, titled "Is Local News Disappearing?" really needs to be, is local news still disappearing? And sadly, I think the answer is yes. And there's probably an awful lot of reasons for it. Top of mind is probably the financial component of it. But the freedom of the press and having access to information should be something that we all have. And according to the study, it says 50 million Americans have little to no access to a reliable source of local news. And that's just a very disturbing fact, especially given what's happening in the world and our need to understand and have opportunity to learn about what's going on in our world.
Yeah, it's a really interesting dilemma because on the one hand, nobody is saying, at least I'm not saying, that legacy media in the way we've always done it should be preserved just for the sake of preserving it. Newspapers are a great example. Is the format, you know, newsprint delivered to your doorstep by a kid on a bike, you know, this kind of classic idea of what the paper meant, or, you know, in a more urban environment, you know, the kid standing on the corner calling out the daily news as people walk past. Is that format necessary to preserve? Well, I don't think it is. We can be nostalgic about it. I'm even now remembering the smell of newsprint at 4 a.m. That was my first job, folding the papers, then riding around the neighborhood and tossing them on the porch. And at the same time, the decline of any form of news reaching a pretty good chunk of the geographical area of the United States is very troubling. 40% of all local newspapers have vanished. This continues to decline. The study reports the impact year over year. There are now 213 counties in the United States with no source of local news. That's up from 206 last year. And in another 1,524 counties, there's only one news source, typically a weekly newspaper. Now, this doesn't mean that people aren't getting information. They're consuming TikTok and Instagram and Facebook and everything else on their phones, YouTube, et cetera. But that's not local news. Could you clarify maybe why this distinction is so important? There's information everywhere, a lot of mis and disinformation in that mix, and that's not local news. So what's the difference?
Right. Well, for me, local news is the things that impact me in my community. So it is discussions around what's happening at City Hall, what's happening at our school districts, what is, you know, what's the street sweeper doing? What's the, you know, road closures that are happening? What community opportunities are there with the nonprofits in our community, or what businesses are coming into the market that are within my, you know, 10-mile radius of my home or my business? That's what I think local news is. It's really the information that matters to me in my hometown, in my community. And that contrasted with what would, if we want to call the national or international news, what's happening in Washington, D.C., what's happening in other countries, which still have an impact on us here in our local hometown, but it is a bit removed in the sense of its direct impact. And there is no doubt that there's countless ways to get information. The distinction for me from a news perspective is the credibility factor that exists with a ethical journalist who does his or her research and finds multiple sources and brings forth a objective discussion on a particular topic and brings forth information. And when jobs are being lost in that area and quality journalists are, and let's face it, quality journalists are expensive. You are paying for experience and knowledge and expertise. And in a time when advertising revenue is down and people are not spending their money in the same way, so it impacts the product being the newspaper, the product being the television broadcast, you got to start cutting costs. And that means cutting expensive employees, but expensive employees in the case of a newspaper are your qualified journalists. And so the product that we are producing then may be less than stellar, which has the same effect of not producing it at all. Cause if it doesn't have any value in it, I don't need to purchase it. And, you know, it's been a challenge, I think, over the years. I don't think we truly understood early on, you know, what the impact of the internet was going to be on traditional media. You know, we'll spend our $6 or $7 on a cup of coffee, but we wouldn't plunk down, and I used to say 50 cents, it's more than that, but the 50 cents to buy the newspaper to read with our coffee. And if we're not investing in it, it obviously has to go away. Those are the for-profit newsrooms that we have in our communities, and those require advertising dollars and they require subscriptions and other things. But this is not just impacting that. We've talked on this show before about the recent funding cuts to public television, and that's the things that you see on PBS or on NPR. And in some of these smaller communities, that may be their only source of news because they no longer have the local newspaper or radio station to give that to them. And now those outlets are also being decimated, to use a very strong word, because public funding is going away and the financial support from the community can't withstand, you know, can't make up for those distinctions. So it's a very troubling scenario. And in the absence of these types of things, then what tends to rise to the top are other sources of getting information that may or may not be as credible or as ethical or as reliable. And I think we can all agree that that leads to the kinds of challenges that some of our communities are facing when that type of information is then considered the news of the community.
Yeah, I just want to add one thing. Local news gathering and reporting is expensive, but not because any one journalist is making a lot of money. In fact, it's a relative to other professions, a low paid field. And in the aggregate, it takes a lot of people reporting, editing, fact checking, not to mention the staff who run the building. So, you know, a newspaper is an expensive operation, but I think the idea that it's because journalists themselves are expensive as individuals. Certainly, any of our listeners who work in the field might say, hey, wait a minute.
Right, you know, right.
What is this buying coffee that you talk of?
Yeah,
you know, it's
yeah.
a luxury I'm not familiar with. I exaggerate. But I think another issue that has to be understood here, and this is really a nonpartisan issue. We have to make this clear. This affects everyone and in ways that are not particularly good. The consolidation of ownership of newspapers, but also online platforms in the hands of a very few, almost every single source of media that you, dear listener, consume is on a platform controlled by a small number of billionaires. Most of them are Republican billionaires. Some of them are Democrat billionaires. There's less than 10, right? the news channels. We've just seen the acquisition of CBS by the Ellisons. You know, they're talking about wanting to get Warner Brothers and TikTok. If every app on your phone that has content on it is coming through a platform owned by a billionaire, is this really, you know, back in the day, right, you could watch Citizen Kane and think about the legacy of the Hearst family in California. And that was very quaint to think about. This has actually become, I think, deeply problematic, especially as we've seen a activist approach to the editorial function in many of these papers. In other words, the owner is setting the guidelines for what can and cannot be said. This is not your grandpa's newspaper. This is a different kind of animal.
Right. And that, I think, is really the biggest challenge in the ownership group philosophy. You know, contrasting that, so, you know, here in Arizona, there are a few ownership groups, and we're grateful for these ownership groups because without that, those publications that they now own probably would have disappeared. They're in smaller markets, and they might not have been able to survive on their own. So by having them part of a larger group, they have access to, you know, a wider swath of journalists. They have a different set of people doing advertising sales, and they can be bundled up with other products from a circulation and subscription perspective. On the national front and these larger conglomerates, it's really that owner influence on the product that is challenging. News is a product. It is something that we consume, and our expectations have always been that it let's go with this, that it's neutral and it has, you know, objective reporters and such. And there is a place in virtually every newspaper for opinion. Most newspapers have an opinion page or an editorial page that allows voices to be one-sided or the other. And that's where that conversation belongs. It does not belong in the day-to-day editorial of reporting on City Hall, reporting on what the schools are doing, what, you know, athletes are doing at the high school, street, whatever it all is. That does not the place for the owner to, you know, to insert his or her opinions. And the trickle-down effect of that is it will impact then the type of advertising that's in those publications, and then the advertising will impact who's being quoted in stories, and that just leads to a very one-sided, really, newsletter propaganda piece that it does no longer have the objectivity. We need the investments into the news outlets. We need the cash flow to be there in order to bring forth a viable product. What we don't need is the influence of those owners in what the final product is. And that's where I think it's getting more and more difficult. And we're seeing many of those long-term journalists who you know, live and die by their ethical code and their desire and to be objective and to be neutral. And that just challenges everything they know about, you know, being a journalist, and they're leaving, you know, they're leaving as a result of that. And then we couple that with just loss of revenue, therefore, you know, layoffs and such. So we are really losing this important part of bringing forth the information. And as I said, without this, other things will rise up and take its place. And that puts a lot of onus on the consumer to be able to decipher and sort through what they're seeing and what they're hearing, and to intentionally look for different voices on a particular topic. And with less and less voices available, that becomes more and more difficult.
I think also there's the very central issue, which every American should care deeply about, which is accountability and having institutions that hold our elected officials, our governments, our corporations, our nonprofits, our school systems, et cetera, hold them accountable for their mandate and for operating in the way that serves the best interests of all. And, you know, whether you think of fictional journalists like Lois Lane in the Superman movies, or very real and important figures in the history of journalism, whether it's Edward R. Murrow, Woodward and Bernstein,
Walter
Ida B.
Cronkite.
Wells, Walter Cronkite, whose name is on the journalism school here at Arizona State University, to contemporaries like Anderson Cooper, et cetera, right? At some fundamental level, whether you like these people or don't like these people, their careers have been defined by their desire to seek the truth and report it, as we've pointed out, is the first line in the Code of Ethics, the Society for Professional Journalists, but also to ask uncomfortable questions to powerful people and try to get the answers to really important questions about what's happening with our money, what's happening with our government, what's happening with our schools, what's happening with the politicization of all of this has followed the monetization shift. And what I mean specifically is it used to be that good, solid reporting was funded by the way ads were sold on radio, TV, and newspapers. And sort of somewhat independent of that, you could report what you needed to report, and the publication was making its money from advertisers who wanted to reach the people who were consuming the information. When we shifted to a digital pay-per-click type of monetization model, now each individual story needs to carry its own weight, needs to engage the listener, the viewer, the reader, needs to have them dwell on the page. Dwell time is a very important metric. Needs to have them click on the thing, needs to keep them engaged, needs to have them share it on the social platforms. We've actually, I think, fundamentally compromised the ability of even the well-intentioned to seek the truth and report it on its own terms, because your career success lies on your stories getting read, watched, or heard, and your newsroom is looking at your own performance metrics, and of course you're going to chase the more sensational thing. Without knowing it, it's going to subtly creep in, and this is not a criticism of any one person. It's hard to, you know, breathe clean air in a polluted room, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. So we've got some pretty profound and fundamental issues. Now, why should we care about any of this? We've talked about this before, but what is the absence of local news? What's the impact of that, in your opinion, Abby?
Well, and the absence of local news means we are operating in a bubble, and we are not learning what is important to us in my hometown, in my zip code, in my area code. And that cannot be how things are. It is extremely important that we understand what's happening on a federal level, what's happening internationally. We need to understand that. It will impact what happens in at home. But I need to know what is happening in City Hall. I need to understand what decisions the mayor and council are making, because those are going to impact me. I need to know that the street a half a mile from me is under construction right now, and I need to leave my house 15 minutes earlier if I'm going to get to where I need to go. And that comes from local news reporting. Our local television station or our local radio tells us things that are happening in the community at large. But we understand that if I am here in the city of Scottsdale and there is something happening in the city of Glendale, I need to understand that because it will impact something that I'm going to be doing later in the week. That's important to know. And it may not be that most people think about the distinction between local and national, or that it matters that much to them. But take that away and ask the question again, does it matter? Like, do you know what is happening? Do you understand what's going on? Do you get what those things are going to mean for you and for your families? And I grew up reading the newspaper. We had to take, you know, for current events, we had to bring an article into school and we had to report on it. So I learned how to read a newspaper. Obviously, I pursued a career that includes the, you know, the journalistic perspective on the things that I'm doing. They're important to the work that I do. I need these individuals for the work that I do on behalf of the clients and organizations that we work for. But I'm also a consumer. I'm also a taxpayer. I'm a voter. I'm a daughter. I'm a sister, right? I mean, all of that stuff matters. And it is deeply troubling that, going back to this study, that in the 10 years that the study has been conducted, that those numbers are continuing to decrease, that the daily newspapers are going away, that that the public television is going away, that ethnic publications, so those that speak to a very specific community, are going away. And we are going to be boiled down to this, you know, sort of homogenized one voice world. That should be bothersome to everybody.
Yeah, we had a great episode with Alice Ferris previously on this show, where we talked in advance of that decision about the importance of preserving public media, radio and television. Obviously, since that time, that has been canceled. The funding has been canceled, including the retroactive attempts to claw back money that was already allocated and dispersed. So that's not looking good, but the game's not over yet. There are many philanthropic organizations, foundations, trying to find ways to fill that gap, at least temporarily. But the impact of that is really significant. And what I took away from that episode was people just don't realize how much public broadcasting provides to so many. You know, in large urban markets like Phoenix, Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, or anywhere else, we tend to take for granted the diversity of sources we have available. I can go out right now to my car and turn on an AM station, find something that's currently playing. Many FM stations, some of them are, you know, syndicated, and it's really national programming distributed locally. But in any case, there are local stations. Same with the television. There are many, many places in this country where the only thing you can get over the air is the public broadcasting network. And if that goes away, there's nothing left. So we have to ask ourselves, what kind of democracy do we say we want? And I, for one, would prefer to live in an environment where anybody who wants it can get accurate information that helps them make a decision. I may not agree with their decision, but helps inform the things they think are important. That's fundamental to what we supposedly do here. And that's the system that's being actively undermined.
Right. You are 100% correct. You should have the option to have all those things at your disposal. Being a smart consumer, finding multiple places to get the information, making an informed decision. I don't have to agree with your decision, but it is an informed decision in the same way that you hope that mine is an informed decision. And it is imperative for all of us to think in those terms that we want to have multiple ways of finding something out. And there are so many ways now to do that. And there are opportunities out there for misinformation, disinformation to be, you know, perpetuated. And I understand it is a difficult time, and it is difficult to be a consumer and to be able to sort through all of those. But the choices need to exist. And I can choose whether to read paper A or paper B, but I need to know that both of them are there for me to do that. And that is what makes us a smart consumer. It makes us an educated populace. It helps us make those decisions. We all shouldn't agree on the outcome. We should not all be on the same side of a particular subject. But the only way we get that way and have a spirited and respectful dialogue is having access to information. And in our smaller rural communities that don't have it, we are doing a disservice to them by not having these opportunities. And I'm not sure that I have the be-all, end-all answer, but I do know that it means that those publications and outlets that we do have access to, we need to support them. We do need to read them. We, you know, if we are in a position to subscribe, then we should try to do that. If we are a company that does advertising, we should consider doing that. But we can only keep that wheel in motion if we make that investment. And that's from a financial perspective, but certainly in acknowledging the importance of having those outlets in our community and fighting to make sure that we keep them.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Copper State of Mind. If you enjoyed the conversation, please share it with a colleague who might also find this podcast valuable. It's easy to do. Just click the share button in the app you're listening to now to pass it along. You can also follow Copper State of Mind in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or any other podcast app. We publish new episodes every other Friday. Copper State of Mind is brought to you by HMA Public Relations, the oldest continuously operating PR firm in Arizona. The show is recorded and produced by the team at Speed of Story, a B2B communications firm in Phoenix, and distributed by PHX.fm, the leading independent B2B podcast network in Arizona. For all of us here at Speed of Story and PHX.fm, I'm Adrian McIntyre. Thanks for listening and for sharing the show with others if you choose to do so. We hope you'll join us again for another episode of Copper State of Mind.